I remember growing up that it was the biggest deal. When my dad got a beeper, and he was excited that he had a pager, and he, you know, someone didn't have to be at the home at all times, and it was the biggest deal to have that. There's two type of people that live at funeral homes. Sometimes they live upstairs. They typically ask, like, you know, you're going upstairs. You live on top of the funeral home. Oh, do you live in the prep room? I like to say that I've lived in the prep room for my whole life. And then there's the basement.
And there's the basement.
And I think you may have lived in the basement at one point of your career at the funeral
home. I did. I lived when I was a student. I lived in the basement. All my other friends that lived in funeral homes lived in the apartment above the funeral home or like above the garage. And I was in the basement. I had no windows. I was directly next to the prep room. So when when they would transfer overnight, they would just put, like, I would go to leave for school in the morning and I couldn't get out. There'd be like, you know, if somebody dropped off at like 5 a.m, they would just put him there. The elevator shaft was right next to my, it was an experience, but I lived in the basement.
Not only that, like, if you got removals in the middle of the night, you're going to be waking up from them coming in and out. And
it was one of those old elevators too, you know, where and the thing's shaking in the hole. It was,
we still have
in the basement.
Yeah. So was there at least a window down there? Were you
No. In fact, there was a tornado, and I didn't even know it. I had no idea. I had no idea there was a tornado until all the power went out, and I went upstairs. It was August 2007. There's a tornado in northern Chicagoland. So no idea.
Oh my God, that would be brutal. My brother and I, when we first started mortuary marketing, we worked from the basement of the funeral home for like the first year.
Yeah.
I could not take it anymore. People always say, you know, you need the sunlight, you get depressed in the winter. And I, for one, like, I know it was like, that's a bunch of baloney. Yeah. After that time frame, I was like, I need to have a window or something to look at that's not just like creamy colored walls and carpet.
I know. That was a big cavernous building too. It was a huge building. And the way that it was set up for, this is when I was a student, you would be at work from 4 p.m. Friday to 7 p.m. or 7 a.m. Monday. Yeah. And you couldn't leave the building. There was no forwarding phones then. There was it was phone ring only in the building. And it was dark in there. It was really dark, but
that'll drive you just crazy. Not being able to leave.
We would sneak across. There was a frozen yogurt place across the street, and somebody would like sneak across there real quick, and you know, somebody else would stand by the door and see if they could hear the phone because it was right across the highway. But that was like our daredevil move. We'd go to Love's frozen yogurt across the street.
Jeez, that must have been the highlight of the weekend. I can only imagine. I just remember, it was definitely a thing for a long time where you had to have someone at the funeral home 24/7, like couldn't miss a call. Yep. And that's why everyone lived above the funeral home or lived on the same street, or the students lived in the funeral home. I remember growing up that it was the biggest deal. When my dad got a beeper, and he was excited that he had a pager, and he, you know, someone didn't have to be at the funeral home at all times. And it was the biggest deal to have that. And then after that, they upgraded to these. He was the first person I think I knew that had a cell phone. And I'll tell you, Dad, I know you listen to every episode. He is not a tech guy. He is the opposite. But he was the first one that I know that he had a cell phone. And these cell phones that they had a walkie-talkie, like literally built in, so they could talk to each other about work. And it was like the four cousins always talking about work stuff. And I'll never forget that for the rest of my life. When I was a kid, it was wild.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a thing though. I mean, and there were some funeral homes, they didn't get on that trend for a long, long time. And there's still some. This wasn't even that long ago. I mean, it was probably 10 years ago. I got offered a job in the Midwest. And part of it was you had to have a landline installed in your home for the funeral home. And it was like, they didn't believe in cell phones because they were too unpredictable. So they're still out there that don't use them.
I just can't. I can't even imagine. It's hard enough as it is doing it just like this. And, Oh, that's next level. That's next level. Yep. All right. I guess we went down a tangent. Today we have on Faith. She is a mortuary professor. She's born and raised Chicago girl, just like me. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot in common besides the being smart enough to be a professor of mortuary science. Faith, tell us a little bit about, I guess, you know, diving into funeral service. How'd you do it? Why'd you do it? Because.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a great story. I just always wanted to do it. Truly. Yeah. It was just what I wanted to do. There was no aha moment. There was nothing. I just I had a friend that her parents owned a funeral home when I was little. I had a little bit of exposure to it then. And it was just always what I wanted to do. So I did. I went to mortuary school in Chicago and then, started working. I've worked in Illinois, New Mexico, Colorado. I've kind of been all over the place.
Yeah, that's a lot of different regions too. So mm-hmm. I'm sure there's like the variety of service. I would love to know, like, what do you see as the biggest difference, I guess, between like Colorado, Chicago, New Mexico? Like,
when I moved to New Mexico, it was a culture shock for me because time is different there. They call it the land of mañana. And it would drive me crazy because I had come from a large Jewish funeral home. Uh-huh. And now I'm in New Mexico. And if the funeral's at 10 o'clock, the funeral starts at 10 o'clock. The family doesn't come till 10:20 a.m. And then we start, you know. So it was a lot of adjustment for me just on how people view time differently. They're a lot more relaxed about it. And that was very, very hard. I would get really frustrated and stuff at first there. And then I kind of got used to it. It's not so much in Colorado. It's a little bit more, they're a little bit more timely here, but still, you know, coming from a place, with high urgency where people were on time and they wanted everything tomorrow, to a place where it was like, oh, you know, well, it's the funeral's at 10, but we're not going to start till 10:30, 10:40. Maybe we'll get to the cemetery, but be on time. Maybe we won't.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was strange, but nobody cared. Nobody cared. So then I just stopped caring, and it was fine.
What if there was like a set time for like a service or something like at a church?
What was hard is when we went to the National Cemetery because that was an hour north of where the funeral home was. Wow. And so it was like, we have to be pulling out of this parking lot at this time, family and friends, you know, and getting all those. I mean, like, it's like herding cats anytime, but it was especially another level there to really explain to them they will not let us be late. And that happened a few times that they had to reschedule the burial because you couldn't get everybody out of the building in time. That was the biggest thing was just, and you know, one of the, I love New Mexico. It's my favorite place in the world. I would move back there in a heartbeat. But I got a lot of exposure to different cultures that I didn't in the Chicagoland area. Sure. And I think what people don't know that aren't from the Chicagoland area, it's still one of the last ethnically segregated cities, I feel like.
Chicago. And so,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you don't always, and maybe it's different now. When I lived there, it was still very much that way. And so you may not get a lot of exposure to different cultures that you would in places that are more of a melting pot, you know, funeral home land, I guess. And so I got a lot of exposure to the Native American populations, the Navajo. And that was something I'd never experienced, you know, anywhere else. And it was really transformative for me and just how I view funeral service and the things that we do to kind of get out of that space of doing it the way that I had always learned and see a completely different thing that I would have never seen had I not lived there.
Yeah, it opens up your ability to work with a bunch of different people and think on your toes more because you don't know exactly what's going on, like every mm-hmm. second of everything. What were some of the, I guess, you just said it yourself, like Chicago is very, I think it's getting better, but that's neither here nor there. I think I've only seen maybe a couple Native American services. Sure. So tell me a little bit about what that's like in general. Yeah. Maybe it's very different here compared to New Mexico.
Yeah, well, I mean, New Mexico has a lot of reservations. And, right. You know, so what will happen is that people will be hospitalized, you know, in one of the major cities, but they live on a reservation. And so they don't really have a lot of interaction. You know, they don't have a lot of interaction with funeral homes. It's not really something sure. that they do a lot of, you know, it's mostly tribal, things that they go through when that happens. But I think the biggest thing for me was, you know, things like they would stay at the funeral home overnight, and they had a practice where they would cut every article of clothing on the deceased. They would bury the person with a lot of their personal belongings.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they would bury them on their own property. They would dig the grave themselves. So I went to a lot of off the grid places, you know, yeah. And trying to, you know, get back there with a casket in a place that's not a mode, you know, cemetery that's got all these streets and these pathways cleared at all. So, they would make their own caskets often. So just a lot of, it was a lot more personal, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
And a lot more, you had to be a lot more flexible. You just had to, whatever it was they wanted to do, they wanted to do, and it was fine. So.
That's super cool. Yeah. A lot of different unique experiences, mm-hmm. seeing a lot of different things. Yeah. What did you mean by them staying overnight? Like, were they doing some sort of rituals throughout the night, or they just wanted to be present with their loved one?
The families I had, they just really wanted to be present with their loved one.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, kind of, they would sleep in the arrangement rooms maybe, or, you know, even some in the chapel. And there wasn't any rituals they were doing that I remember, but, it was more about just not leaving the body by itself.
Yeah.
So somebody would stay, you know, immediate family members would stay overnight if it wasn't like a same day situation.
Yeah. That's super interesting. And then cutting the clothes, they're doing you a favor. They're saving you.
Right. Right. Yeah. But no, it was great. A lot of, I saw so many neat things in New Mexico, and so many things that you'll never get exposure to unless you're in a different part of the country. So
no doubt about it. That's awesome. Then what about Colorado? How has that been? I know you're there now. What does that look like for you nowadays? And what are some of the things you're seeing out there?
You know, Colorado is it's really a melting pot, honestly, where there's people that, you know, come from Texas, New Mexico, you know, all of California, all over the place. So it's really a mixed bag here, of what you'll find. There's not really one thing. You know, Colorado is a leader in natural burial options, composting. We have all of those options here. And that's a little bit more prevalent here than in other areas, but it's pretty mixed here. There's not really like one thing, you know.
Tell us a little bit about those different options that you might not see in other parts of the country, then, like the composting or the natural burial.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like it's definitely a trend going on, and it's something that we need to be informed about as funeral directors.
Yeah, I mean, we have natural organic reduction is legal here. We have one provider for that. We have the Colorado Burial Preserve, which is a natural burial cemetery. There's several different funeral homes that offer alkaline hydrolysis. Mm-hmm. There's an open pyre cremation in Crestone,
wow.
which is different.
Yeah.
So a lot of different things here, but a little bit of everything. There's still a lot of traditional funeral service here too. So.
Yeah, it's just more options for a family. And I mean, I always say it's whatever they want to do, like mm-hmm. that's what we're going to do for you.
Yeah.
So I guess I would like to know more about like the cemeteries that have that, because this is such like probably a stupid concern that I think of, but I guess maybe I'm not the only one, but maybe I am. When you have like these natural like burials or like going back into the earth, like naturally, mm-hmm. What if like a kid like got to the property and like, I don't know, could they like find something or dig? Like that would just be my biggest fear, like that someone young has like a traumatic, like unbelievable experience. This might be the stupidest, like weird thing.
You think you're just going to stumble upon a body or something? Is
that yeah. Honestly, like, that is like my, the one thing that I'm like,
no, I don't it's know. Still buried. I mean, they still, you know, are putting them, you know, feet down in yeah. shrouds and all of that. Then, and usually if there's any kind of marker at all, it's a natural marker, like a natural yeah. stone or wood or something like that. Okay. And there, you know, there, it's not like you're just walking to the, you know, to school and there's a body. It's, why are you there? Why are you at the natural burial cemetery? Right. Like
that's true.
You're not just going to happen upon it. It's like acreage out in, you know, it's like a cemetery. It's a regular cemetery. And in the fact that it's a confined area, you know, for that purpose.
Yeah.
It's not laid out like a cemetery we're used to. It's not sections and lots, and right. it's not, you know, graves in a row or anything like that. The family chooses where the person's going to go, and it may go, you know, north, south, east, west, whatever. I mean, you know, all of that is a lot less less stringent, but no, yeah. I mean, they're still burying people at appropriate depths and all yeah. of that. Yeah.
I guess maybe I just heard that they were trying to pass something. Maybe it was in Illinois that you could like bury in your own backyard or something like that. And a couple of hospitals were talking about it. And that maybe that's where my concern comes from. Not specifically the cemetery. It would be like if it's on someone's like property. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, burying on your own property is possible, and it's already possible in a lot yeah. of places if you get the proper, you know, permits and stuff for it. I think where the concern comes in is when you have people that don't know what they're doing trying to do it,
yes.
you know.
Yeah.
So while you may still want to bury mom or dad on your ranch, that's great, but please still hire a funeral, hire a professional, yeah. you know, just because you can do something yourself doesn't necessarily mean you should.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think that's where, you know, Colorado specifically gets a lot of this discussion around in the industry, is that we don't have licensing here. Anybody can yeah. be a funeral director. You can just say you are and you are. There's no real, real licensing at all.
Wow.
But it's still, I mean, you can do a lot of things, but you still, that doesn't mean you can do them on your own. Right.
Right. Right. Like I could grab a pair of pliers and pull out a tooth, but I'm not a dentist. Right.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, another question on this. This, I'm going on so many random weird tangents.
That's fine.
All right. This is kind of funny. What if, like, all right, someone kills someone and they want to get away with it? Yeah. Do they monitor these cemeteries like a little bit extra? I guess this could go for any cemetery though, really. But I guess they would be in vaults and stuff. But what about like these cemeteries specifically? Isn't that an interesting thought? I'm not trying to give anyone ideas.
Well, I mean, if you really want to dig up somebody, you're going to do it, right? It doesn't matter where.
Oh, I'm saying if they're trying to dispose. They're going the other way.
Dispose of somebody. I mean, yeah. Well, again, it's still a cemetery that, you know, is managed by people. I think they would notice if there was a hole dug that they didn't dig. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, it's not your best bet is to drive up into the mountains and just do that. You know, don't try to put them in a cemetery because somebody will notice that there's a hole they didn't dig, right?
All right, I'm done with my tangents on that. Okay, so you're a professor at the name of the school for me?
Yeah, Arapahoe Community College. So I'm the program chair of the mortuary science program.
Okay, I'd love to hear about that since there is no licensure in Colorado. Yeah. I would love to hear about what the program's like, because I'm sure it's a little bit different and unique compared to maybe Worsham, like where we both went to school.
Yeah, I mean, the curriculum's the same. So we're ABFSC accredited. So we teach the same. We have this filed the same standards as every other accredited mortuary school. So we do all the, we hit all the same benchmarks and standards for accreditation that nice. Every other school does. But, you know, what's interesting about our program is that we're very popular. We're a competitive program. People want to come to our program. I turn away more applicants every year than I accept. And part of that is because we have online classes, which is a major thing now. But the fact that there's no license in Colorado doesn't mean people aren't going to school. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of our students come from surrounding states that don't have a mortuary school in their state.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, there's still people that value education and that want to get that education, even though it's not required for them.
It's just like any other job, you know, that you're going after. Like, people are going to be looking at your resume for what your background is. So like, if I'm a funeral home in Colorado, like, I would much prefer someone that has some experience and education behind them as opposed to nothing.
Sure. Yeah. It was very strange to me when I first moved here that I was working alongside so many people that, and I kind of felt like, I'll be honest with you, and I had a lot of conversations about this with people when I first moved here, like, I had done all this to get where I am. And I was working alongside other people that just their last job was the bank or the Walmart or the, and it blew my mind. It just blew my mind that, like, we could both be doing the same job and be like, have the same job title and have the same all of that. When I had gone to school, I had done apprenticeships, I had done all these things, and then I get here and it's like, nobody cares, it doesn't matter, which was very, very strange for me.
Yeah. How do you wrap your head around that? And it'd be hard not to be frustrated by that coming from probably you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was frustrated by it. I was concerned. I mean, it just made me feel like, why did I do all this if I didn't have to? But that's the only state where you don't have to do anything, for the most part. But, you know, what I will say is that a license doesn't make you a good funeral director. And there's a lot of people that have not gone to school that have learned, you know, through on-the-job training that do a great job.
Sure.
I certainly can't say that. I've met many people here in Colorado that are excellent funeral directors.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I always thought, I just view education differently, maybe. Like, I like education for education's sake. So if I'm going to do something, I'm going to get educated in it. And there's a lot of people that have the attitude or the belief that well, I don't need to, like, education's a check mark, right? It's just one thing I have to do. And if I don't have to do it, I don't have to do it. Whereas, as for me, even if I didn't have to do it, I would still seek it out. Because I just like education and learning things, but
always improving. There's always something to learn. And
yeah. But, you know, there's deeper issues there too. You know, why would someone go spend $10,000 on a degree to do a job they're already doing? You know, it costs money. So it's not free. I mean, maybe if education weren't so costly, you'd see more people in this state, you know, doing it for the sake, you know, to have the education. But when they don't need it, and it's kind of just seen as like a check mark towards licensing that they don't need, I mean, I understand not wanting to invest the money, right?
Right. There's less incentive, and that's like, why? If I can do it already, then why go to?
I pay the money to do what I'm already doing. Yeah.
Right. Right. So what do you teach then specifically, and like, what are some of your philosophies, or what are some of the unique things that go on at your school?
I teach, so I'm the program chair, so I kind of teach whatever everybody else doesn't want to teach. I let my staff kind of choose what they specialize in and what they want to teach first, and then I kind of just fill in the rest. I like teaching funeral directing. I like teaching management. Those are my favorite ones to teach, but I mean, I can teach every class in the program, so I'm kind of the fill-in. My staff has specialties. They're really, really good at certain things and really effective there. So I put people in specific places for specific reasons, you know. And if you're teaching something you're not interested in, you're not going to teach it as well as if it's like your favorite thing, right? So, but, you know, I think one of the things that makes my program different is that, you know, we do teach the ABFSC curriculum. We have to, and we do, but we add a lot of things to it. And I don't look at mortuary science education as funeral director school.
Okay.
I don't. I look at it as preparing death care practitioners for wherever they end up. And that could be a traditional funeral home, that could be a direct disposal, that could be a natural provider, that could be hospice, that could be organ and tissue donation, that could be coroner, that could be all kinds of things. Right. And so I try to make it, I try to just make it bigger, I guess, is the way to explain it. You know, we talk about the things that we need to talk about and hit the things we need to hit. But I bring in a lot of modern, you know, things, a lot of current, you know, issues, current event kind of things, and really try to give them more of a looking forward, you know, how, when we graduate, when we get jobs, what is it we want to do in the industry? What specifically interests us, and where do we want to take the industry? I don't teach my students that you're entering an industry that's already made for you. It's already designed. I teach them that you get to choose, you get to decide what the industry looks like. And really, you know, I've said this for a couple years now, and I'll keep saying it. We are in the most transformative time in death care since embalming, since the Civil War. I really believe this. Our generation of people, the people in school now, I think our generation, I think we're probably about the same age. You and I think we're a little late. I think we were still kind of on the tail end of traditional funeral service. Mm-hmm. And so while we maybe didn't break the mold and change the industry, we're the bosses now. And
you laid the groundwork.
Yeah, we did though. You know what I mean? So those of us that see that and see what's happening, we're in charge now. And so we can let the younger people that are coming in have that freedom to change the industry. We didn't do it, but we recognize it, and we are going to be the generation that allows it.
Right. Does that make sense? Yeah, absolutely. Because there's, I mean, many, many people have said the prior generation to us funeral directors, it was very challenging to make any change.
Yes.
And there's been a big turning in that, and a lot of good progress for funeral homes, for families, for everything in between. Yeah. And that's a good thing. And I really like that mentality of, you know, going to mortuary school doesn't mean like you're going to be a funeral director. Doing this podcast, I've just learned there are so many other things that you can do in our realm of, you know, death care, so to speak. There's so many things that you can do, and you don't have to like, okay, you're going to a funeral home and like, you're going to go own one. Like there's so many different things you can do.
So many things.
It's so much more attractive to people to say, I'm not locked into this box. And even a traditional funeral home, you're not really necessarily locked in your box. There's so many different jobs.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that other schools, you know, teach that way, but you know, there are, as in any system, there are traditional, you know, schools that are more traditional conservative, and that's fine. And if that's your bag, then that's maybe where you go. And then there's other schools that are a little more progressive or innovative or, you know, forward thinking in really realizing that, you know, we owe the industry students that not only know what they're supposed to know to pass their boards and, you know, get licensed, because that's ultimately what, you know, you have to get licensed in every other state but this one. but we also want people that can critically think, people that can see, you know, what's going on around, that can see the bigger picture, and that aren't afraid to, you know, take the steps that we need to take, you know, in the industry to make it better for our families. That's all.
Very well said. Very well said. How did you get into teaching in the first place? I mean, you were a funeral director for quite some time. That's a big change.
I was.
And why?
Yeah. So I was a funeral director for a long, long time. And then I had been the funeral liaison for the organ and tissue agency here in Colorado. So I was the liaison and the person that managed the relationships with all the funeral homes in Colorado and Wyoming. And so I wasn't funeral directing directly before I went into education, but I was very much involved in the industry. We have 200 something funeral homes in Colorado that I worked with, 24 in Wyoming. So still doing that stuff. And really involved in the industry still. But I actually applied to be an adjunct instructor because I always thought it'd be fun. I loved mortuary school. I loved it. And I still, you know, remember most of my instructors. And I always thought it'd be something that would be kind of fun to do on the side. And that interview turned into faculty, and that turned into program chair. So I kind of came into it accidentally. I was just trying to get a part-time job and, you know, for to just teach, because I thought it'd be fun, and I ended up being the program chair. So
it's very impressive. And yeah. It's a cool path that there's so many, like we were saying, there's so many different ways you can go. And that's a really cool thing and an awesome thing that you did.
Oop, that's a death call here. Hold on just a second. All right, I think the students got it. I'm sorry about that. You know, we've been seeing a lot more business come in ever since we started mortuary marketing. And I got to tell you, all the funeral homes we work with, they're saying the same thing. So what do? We run ads on Google and other similar sites that get directed at families that need a funeral home in your area. It then brings them to a page that we've designed for you that gets the family to call you to inquire for your services. It's really increased our volume big time. It's working for my funeral home, and I think most parlors could really benefit from its uses. I put a bunch of information in the podcast description. Go check it out. I'm always happy to help talk with you and answer any questions you might have. All right, let's get back to our morbid discussion.
Where, since you're very much involved with, I think the future of funeral services seems like a big focus for you. I'd like to know, like, Faith, where do you see our industry overall going? Like, what is the path, or like, so, like a big trend that you're seeing that we might be able to pounce on as funeral directors, or if you're in mortuary school or doing something like that?
I think that we need to get out of our own way. And so we go to these seminars and we go to these conferences and we go to this, and we have all this continuing ed about all these threats to funeral service coming from the outside. First it was cremation, now it's natural burial, now it's this or that. But that's not it. You know, the thing is that we have to be willing to adapt and change with what consumers are telling us they want. And so, you know, there's not one threat to funeral service. The threat is our hesitation to do, you know, what consumers are telling us that they want. So we have to view our roles differently. We have to be willing to embrace natural options. And it's so funny because I still, gosh, even in some of the curriculum, you know, cremation is presented as something new and something to overcome and something to, we were cremating people before we were burying them, y'all. Didn't you take funeral history class? Like that's what we started out doing, you know? I mean, there's nothing new about cremation. And so every time I hear about the challenge of cremation, I can't hear this again, you know, but I hope that we've learned something from that. I'm not convinced we have, with natural burial, which again, we've been doing that since the beginning of time. Natural burial isn't new. It's the oldest of the old, you know, alkaline hydrolysis, you know, human composting, all of these things. I think we're at a critical point, and that's why I say our students are in this transformative time, because the way that we respond to this is going to make or break us as an industry. Mm. And we did it wrong with cremation. We did it wrong. We were so afraid of it that we made it cheap. We made it easy because we didn't want people to do it. And now we go, well, why do they want it cheap and easy? Because we told them it was cheap and easy. We told them that's what it was, you know? Mm. We did that. So I think that the future is embracing, you know, the all disposition options, being able to express the value of what we do and not be so worried about the disposition of the person, you know, and focus more on how we're serving the family and the things that we're doing for them. I don't know. I mean, I see it all over social media. You know, there's a lot of exposure about those things which didn't exist before, which is awesome. You guys, you know, are all over social media showing people things that nobody was showing anybody before, you know? So the public is more educated than ever about what their options are. Yeah. And that's a good thing. Yeah. And we need to be more educated than them on those things. So we just got to keep up. I was going to say something else about that too, but now it's gone away. But really, you know, I see on social media, funeral directors saying all these negative things about natural burial, all of these new options, all of this. And I just see history repeating itself, you know, and I really hope that doesn't happen. And that's where I see, you know, within the students, they're so interested in natural things. They're so interested in different disposition options. And ultimately, we're not an industry that just buries people, right? We help people through that process, whatever that looks like for them. And that's what we need to focus on. So
it's that connection with the family that means more than anything. Mm-hmm. It's providing the service that their loved one would want or that they would want. And yeah. I said so many really good things there. My favorite thing is stop blaming outside. I there's nothing that pisses me off more is when people assign blame outward. Start looking inward, okay?
Yeah.
What can we do to make this better for our families? Stop saying, oh, this natural burial, oh, cremation. Okay, those things, they're happening, whether you like it or not. You're not going to – stop trying to change people's mind. It's not going to work. How about you look in and say, what can I do? What can my funeral home do to make our service better? What can we provide?
Yeah.
I also love what you said about us – cremation being cheap and easy, and we did it to ourselves because no one wanted to do it because it was just different and no one wanted to do it. So the people that got out there, they did it and then they started competing who could get lower on price, and then everyone flocked to them. And now it's like, this is what it is associated with, is cheap and easy. And it's like, we don't need to do that for these other options. Like, these can be beautiful, nice things. And who cares? Like, let everyone do whatever they want to do. I could go on and on, but
we're going that route too with embalming, you know, as well with the industry not agreeing about that. And this is controversial, but whatever it is what it is. I think that we're seeing us doing that to ourselves now with traditional burial, viewing the body, embalming, all of those things. I think that a lot of the ways that we, you know, trainings that we do as funeral directors, things that we're told is that we families have to see the body and they have to see it embalmed. Mm-hmm. And we know as embalmers that there's a time and embalming is for a reason. It does things that, you know, that we want it to do. Yep. And it's appropriate, you know, in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. But you can view unembalmed remains,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can. And so we can't, you know, we can't tell ourselves, we can't gaslight ourselves into thinking, well, if we don't embalm and they don't view the body, then they're not going to be able to begin their grief journey and da, 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 da. Do you know that Jewish people don't view the body?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They have a their own grief journey too. You know, I bring this up because I was presenting to a community event last month while it was October, and there was a lot of different people there. We were talking about traditions in other countries, and you know, a lot of the other countries they don't view the body at all. And someone brought up about that, how, you know, I don't really want, you know, to be laid out in a casket and have everybody looking at my dead body and all of that, but. I feel like that's what I have to do. And it's not what you have to do. And we have to be okay with families not doing that. You know, we've almost made ourselves professionals in psychology in a way that's outside of our realm, right? So mm-hmm. so we're telling ourselves, well, they have to view the body, we have to embalm and they have to view the body to give themselves closure and all these things. But And we've married viewings with traditional burial is the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
Right. So we have forgotten that people can still view prior to cremation. People can dress and, you know, be involved in preparing their loved one for alkaline hydrolysis, composting. So we can't say that our fear of the new options is that it's going to take away the viewing opportunity for families that they need to begin this grief journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that the point that I'm trying to make is when I see opposition against those things, it's always, well, they need to view the embalmed body for their grief. But they can view the body in all those other ways. And that's just one thing that I just see every, you know, the industry kind of going in two different directions and two different schools of thought there that that doesn't really make sense. We can't say we don't like natural options because the family doesn't get to view the body, and we know that's so important, because that's not true.
Okay.
You can cut all of that out. I don't know, but
No. I agree with the majority. I don't think the majority of people are thinking that they can't view the body if they're doing these options like cremation or viewing a body before cremation. Like that's, I feel like even in the most traditional areas, like I come from a very traditional funeral home.
Sure.
And it is absolutely an option that families are seeking all the time at this point, which is a beautiful thing. It's a great thing. And, you know, so that would be my only pushback on that point. I don't think people are disagreeing with that, but what I do agree with is that, I think that these options are fantastic for families, so we can provide these everyone a service that is catered to them. So if they want to see their loved one in their state, obviously there are different circumstances. Like we're both morticians. We know sometimes embalming, like that, it makes a big difference and it does help. And like, we can say that to a family, like, just so you know, like the embalming process has been done for a long, long time. It does make your loved one, if you want them to be the most, you know, presentable stuff, but that doesn't mean you have to do it by any means. Like we can of course have a viewing, they're going to look like themselves as long as the circumstance that isn't crazy or anything like that. So it's just about giving them options and not putting yourself in this box where I have to do it this way, I have to do it this way. Be open to, you know, different ideas from different people. And that way we can grow together and just make everything better for everyone, I suppose.
For sure. What I was trying to say that I wasn't articulating well was that, you know, when you see funeral homes that are afraid of natural or afraid of traditional burial going away.
Yeah.
If they want cremation, they say it's because they want the family to view the body and people don't have respect for the dead and respect for all these things anymore. And that's what they say their opposition is. And my point is that you don't have to have opposition to other disposition methods, because like with cremation, people view prior to cremation. If your thing really is that you truly, truly think families need to view their loved one, they can still do that. So find a better reason to be against it, I guess, there's a lot of holes that can be poked in the wall. It's because they can't, they're not going to be able to view the body, and it's just that fear we have of the within the industry of these new things.
I think it's the change, and people associate, like we kind of touched on, like the traditional funerals being like our biggest source of income, and it's like, okay, that is true, but that doesn't mean our other services can't make up for that in different ways. Like there are a bunch of different things that we can do to make up for our income in other ways. So stop thinking like, oh, because it's natural burial, because it's cremation, our funeral home is going to close down and we're not going to make enough money. Okay. Wrong.
But we don't want to say that. We don't want to say that. We want to say, care about, I know, but that's exactly what I'm trying to say. We don't want to say we're afraid of losing revenue, because that makes us look like we're in it for the money.
Yeah, but
we want to say it's because we want families to view, because we know it helps their grief process.
Okay.
So we've clung to this, like,
it's a mask.
It's completely a mask. But if we pay attention, and if we know anything about business, you know, your merchandise shouldn't matter that much what you sell. I mean, your services are the money. Guess what? You can do the same services no matter what the physical disposition of the body is, and it's not going to make a difference. But we're so afraid of losing money that we're going to make it a human psychology issue when it's not.
Right.
And
so
we don't talk about the real thing, which is how do we provide these services to our families, because we want to talk about other things, because we don't want to say what we really mean.
Yeah. And we know what we mean. And I think we all like that's probably a deeper thing. Like why are you trying to force that? And it's like, okay, make up for it in other ways, branch out your services so you can do more. And goodness gracious, just just do a better job, get more families in the door, and then you have nothing to worry about on top of it. Grow your business naturally as opposed to cling on. We do 125 calls a year and we need 100 of them to be traditional. We got to stop that frame and like, let's go expand what we do and expand to more families. And then all will be good at your funeral home as long as you keep up. Because if you don't keep up, then you're just going to get brushed aside. That's what's going to happen. So the funny part about it is the more you're resisting, the more it's going to persist. So it's like, if you're not trying to keep up, you're going to get left behind. Just like people like when we were probably going through it or like a little bit before that, people were resisting like websites and things like crazy things like that. The ones that did that, gone. Yep. They were gone in 5 years. See you later. You don't have a website. You got to answer your own phones in the middle of the night. Like it's just, I can go on, but it's interesting stuff. No doubt about it.
And our students, our new grads are going to push these funeral homes to be more innovative and to be more with the times. Sure. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out because they are not looking for traditional funeral service. That's not how they view it. And so, you know, we can talk about the differences in employers and employees all day long, but ultimately that's what I mean. And when I say they're in the most transformative time is the students that are in school are going to be the ones that direct how the industry reacts to these things. And it's either we're either going to learn something from what we did with cremation or we're not.
Right. Absolutely. And like, don't get me wrong. Like I'm a prep room guy. Like I love being. And that has nothing to do with it. It's more like taking the broader scope and like being wise and taking in your surroundings and trying to understand point of views. That I just wanted to say that because I do love the prep room. So don't get me wrong.
Why? I mean, I'm an embalmer. I mean, I'm pro family. I'm not pro embalming. I'm not pro natural. I'm not pro anything. There you go. All I am is pro options and pro family. And I'm trying to create. And we have students that love embalming. They want to go be embalmers. Cool. Awesome. We have students that embalm their cases and never want to look at an embalming room again. Cool. There's a place for them too. Yeah. So we just need to, as an industry, expand what our definition of a funeral director or a funeral home or a service provider is in response to what consumers are telling us that we want, and we'll be okay. So I hope we can do that.
I love it. Well, Faith, thank you so much. That was such a fun conversation. People are going to love that. And hopefully it wakes some people up or like shows some people different options and just a really good conversation about the things that we're going through. And it's productive for a lot of people to hear and to understand. And everyone, you know, feel free to chime in and like do your thing. And it's not like one person's point of view is always right or always wrong. It's all how we work together so that we're like a collective whole. And that's something that we've been able to do now, I think, because of social media and more things like that, things like our podcast, like yours as well, like bringing us funeral directors together and trying just to make it more of a pro family thing, to steal yours. Yeah. That pro family, that's what it is all day. So Faith, thank you so much for joining. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.